We're talking with political commentator and Wisconsin's own Charlie Sykes here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. 8 weeks out from the November election, and, you know, partisan politics is part and parcel with the COVID-19 pandemic. Labor Day marks the traditional start of the campaign season. Yesterday, we saw both Vice President Mike Pence and Democratic Vice President nominee Senator Kamala Harris both made appearances in our battleground state, La Crosse and Milwaukee, respectively. Neither campaign is ignoring Wisconsin this time. How has President Trump changed the GOP? What do you think the Republican Party will look like after November? We're at 800-642-1234. Charlie Sykes is a former conservative radio talk show host on WTMJ in Milwaukee. He's the founder and the editor-at-large of the conservative political news site, The Bulwark. Charlie Sykes, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you.
Well, for decades, you were one of the most influential conservative voices here. Now you're one of the Republican Party's and President Trump's fiercest critics. What troubles you about President Trump and the GOP right now?
Well, how much time do we have? What I think troubles me the most is Donald Trump, the man, who back in 2016 I described as a serial liar, a con man, a narcissist, someone with the emotional maturity of a 9-year-old who wanted access to the nuclear codes. But let's set that aside for a moment, because Donald Trump has proven to be exactly who he is. What has been more troubling has been watching a Republican Party that has decided that it is more interested in being a cult of personality than it is being a movement based on ideas. One principle after another, whether you want to talk about fiscal prudence, whether free trade, American exceptionalism, one after another, those values were jettisoned. Not to mention just the damage that's been done to the culture, the American political culture, by 4 years of Donald Trump.
I want to take us to Kenosha here and the protests against police brutality. And you've been talking about this in your podcast. You have said that we're in this cultural hot civil war. We're on dystopian fast forward. Can you explain what you're talking about?
Well, I think I probably said that a couple of weeks ago. The dystopian fast forward was not only are we divided as a country into political tribes, but it appears to be increasingly violent, and the possibility that this could be a hot war. The fact after what happened in Kenosha with the president, who is rather than pouring the balm of calm over the situation, seems to be encouraging his supporters to go into places like Portland, Oregon, and has been defending the vigilante, the young man down in Kenosha. This strikes me as a very, very dangerous moment that America is a tinderbox. And that rather than calming the situation, we're going into the next 8 weeks in which I just have the sense that the worst is yet to come in terms of partisan rhetoric, in terms of the vilification of one another. And this could be a very dangerous moment for America.
Do you imagine there could be escalation? And how are the Republican Party and Democratic politicians handling this moment in terms of voters as well?
Well, when this first happened, I thought this was going to be a real problem for the Democrats. And by the way, it may still be that the president had seized upon this urban violence and said, look, this is intolerable. I alone stand between chaos and law and order. And I wasn't certain that this wouldn't work. It has worked in the past. It's worked in Wisconsin in the past. It's worked nationally in 1968, 1972 with Richard Nixon. But I have to say, I think the situation is very fluid. And I think that after the shooting in Kenosha by the 17-year-old young man, Kyle Rittenhouse, and the president's defense of him, I think the dynamic might have changed a little bit, because the one thing that voters do not want is a president who is stoking the fire. And I think that so far, Joe Biden, particularly that speech that he gave last week, hit most of the right notes. I think that that Biden actually found himself in a place where most Americans are, which is that you can You can be appalled by the instance of police violence that we saw down in Kenosha, support the peaceful demonstrations, but then strongly denounce the rioting, the burning, and the violence. And I think that he did that. And Trump, in contrast, looks like he simply wants to exploit it. And I think you're seeing this in the national polls and the Wisconsin polls. And I want to emphasize so far, it might change if violence continues around the country. But so far, this doesn't seem to be resonating with voters. It doesn't seem to be moving the fundamentals of this race. Now, it will appeal to Donald Trump's base, but I don't think his base right now is large enough to win this election. So at the moment, my sense is that this is a failing political tactic.
Do you view that? Do you view that Wisconsin is a type of microcosm, if you will, for national political debates now?
Absolutely. I think that we are very much a microcosm. I think that our demographics match that of the other states that will make a difference. And by that, I mean the upper Midwestern states, you know, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Minnesota, all of those states, possibly Ohio. We're a much whiter electorate than the nation as a whole. We have a much higher portion of our electorate that is non-college educated, white voters, which tends to be Trump friendly. But having said that, I think that the breakdown between urban, rural, and suburban votes mirrors exactly what you're seeing in a lot of other states. And I think that will be the story of the 2020 election.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Charlie Sykes. He's founder and editor at large of The Bulwark. He's also a former conservative talk show host. We're talking with him about the conservative movement in America ahead of November, what he sees now with the GOP. Taking your questions, your insights, how do you think that President Trump has changed the Republican Party? What do you think the GOP will look like after November? Join in at 800-642-1234. Charlie, let's talk about the national conventions. What did you see as the strategy of the Republican Party in its national convention last month?
Well, I think it was mainly designed to bring back wobbly Republican voters. I think they were aiming at suburban voters, suburban women voters, trying to convince them that perhaps they were a kinder and gentler party. But I think the message was very, very much mixed. I think that they were trying to shore up their base while bringing back Republicans who might have been disillusioned.
Are there any undecided voters out there?
That is an excellent question. And I will tell you that I've debated this back and forth on both sides of this. I honestly don't know. I think there are some voters who might be on the bubble, but it's a very, very small number. But that doesn't mean it's not significant, because this election might be decided by a small number of voters. But I do understand. I was actually on a television show the other day where somebody was making the point there are no persuadable voters, that the entire campaign is simply about motivation and turnout. And I pushed back on him, but I'm not sure that he's wrong.
We're talking with political commentator Charlie Sykes, who stays with us. His most recent book is called How the Right Lost Its Mind. We're exploring the Republican Party in these times. What comes next? Are you a conservative who supports President Trump? Tell us what you like about him and the effect he's had on the party. Are you a conservative who is opposed to President Trump? Will you vote for Joe Biden in November? And if so, why? Join in with your perspective. It's 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Charlie Sykes right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking with longtime conservative talk show host Charlie Sykes about the future of the GOP and the Republican election strategy. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Are never Trumpers becoming never Republicans? Will party allegiance kick in on election day? As we've been talking about, are there really any undecided voters out there? These are questions that Charlie Sykes has explored in recent times. Conservatives, how will you vote in November? It's 800-642-1234. And Charlie Sykes is our guide to the conservative movement and the GOP. He stays with us. Let's take a call now. Peter is with us in Reedsburg. Hi, Peter.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have some concerns about Trump. He should do more. I heard the speaker just say that, you know, Trump and the speech by Biden was saying that they could, that Biden's speech was saying he was really trying to calm the violence. I totally disagree with that. Speaker of the House had a chance to calm this down, and she said, people do what people do. How stupid is that? And then you got Biden not condemning. He's saying peaceful violence, but this is happening in Democratic-controlled governor states and Democratic city mayors, and this is where it's happening, and yet it's not happening in the Republic's thing. It's happening in the Democratics. So to push this thing and make it sound like it's all Trump's fault is, but Trump should do more.
Peter, let's have Charlie Sykes respond to your insights. Charlie, go ahead.
Well, that of course is the Trump talking point, that this is Democratic states, Democratic cities. But the question is, what leadership is the president providing? I'm not sure what the caller was referring to. Nancy Pelosi's not running for president. The Joe Biden speech was, look, I admitted on my podcast that I didn't want to actually say anything really great about Joe Biden, but that was a really good speech. It was a crafted speech. It was a well-crafted speech. It was a very thoughtful speech. And I would urge people to read it as opposed to reading what your friend's Facebook posts say about it. But the fact is that we're all Americans, and there was a time when we expected that the president would represent all Americans. And this whole notion of that we divide the country into red and blue, and that there's a real America, and then there's these Democratic, cities where these terrible things are happening. Look, this is an American problem, and I do think that this is a moment again where we should dial down the rhetoric as opposed to raise the rhetoric up.
You mentioned earlier wobbly Republicans, using the word wobbly there. How much of an issue is allegiance in the GOP now?
Well, it's huge. I think that right now party loyalty has become one of the dominant drivers of American politics. And by that, I mean also the negative partisanship, that people are motivated to vote against the other party and how strong that is. And so you'll see this, that virtually every conversation is going to be dominated by why I don't like the other side as opposed to, why I like my side. And, of course, this has been coming for some time. Donald Trump did not create this phenomenon. I'm not saying that. The dysfunction in our politics was a pre-existing condition. But what I've never seen before is this the often unquestioning loyalty to the person. We didn't have that when Ronald Reagan was the president, when George Bush was the president. You didn't have this cultic personality where if you disagreed with them somehow – you were excommunicated. I thought it was amazing. You asked about the Republican convention. I thought it was really remarkable that the convention voted to not have a new platform, that basically what the party said was whatever Donald Trump is in favor of, we are in favor of. This is a political party that used to pride itself on having ideas and ideology and proposals and policies. And essentially they said, yeah, we're just with that guy. That's I think historians are going to look back on that as a really telling moment in what has happened to the Republican Party.
We're talking with Charlie Sykes, the founder of The Bulwark, the host of The Bulwark podcast, talking about the GOP and the state of our country's conservatives, with your insights at 800-642-1234. We heard from Timothy, sent us an email saying, I see certain similarities between how President Trump approaches governing as president and how Scott Walker and the Republican majority have governed in Wisconsin. And Timothy is asking, how do you assess recent Republican leadership in Wisconsin with the benefit of hindsight, and what advice would you give the majority leadership in the state now?
Well, that's a complicated question because, of course, people will remember that I was a supporter back in the day. But that was also back when Scott Walker was an open critic of Trump and Trumpism. I think that one of the things that's happened, and I do give a lot of thought to the way in which we became hyper-polarized in Wisconsin, the way it really became us versus them, and whether or not when I was on the radio, I contributed to that. And I'm willing to acknowledge that I did. And once you become hyper-polarized, you become less focused on solving problems and getting things done than in just simply beating the other guy. And I think that's one of the moments we're at in politics where we almost don't expect government to solve problems or to deal with the issues in front of us, because it's all been about point scoring. And I think that in some ways we modeled that behavior. I would point out, though, that one of the things that's been hard for me to get my head around is watching the Trumpification of the Republican Party in Wisconsin, because I had been under the impression that we, in fact, were different, that you know, we were the party of Paul Ryan, we were the party of reformers, and suddenly we've become the party of Donald Trump. And so, you know, the switch here in Wisconsin has been about as dramatic as it has been elsewhere, although I take the writer's point that the hyper-partisanship and the we have the majority and we're going to ram things through mentality probably is not as far off as I might like to think.
Charlie, what effect do you think conservative media like Fox News, like Breitbart, Rush Limbaugh, what have they had on the Republican Party?
A dramatic effect. It's really impossible to overstate it. In fact, what they have done is they have created an alternative reality. It's not just that there's an echo chamber. It's an alternative reality silo. And I think that you need to understand, you need to see almost everything that happens in American politics through the lens of understanding that one part of America, maybe 40% of America, has an entirely different narrative. They hear different stories. They have different personalities that they follow. They have different talking points. We could be in an era where we have the most dramatic developments and investigative reporting, but it won't penetrate through to, you know, much of the electorate because of this alternative reality. And this is something I've written about, because it is part of being part of conservative talk radio. I really thought we were sort of the other part of the story. We were the counterpoint, but we morphed into something I think much more toxic. You know, for example, this story that's playing out about the president's regarding people who had volunteered for the Vietnam War, or members of the military, as losers and suckers. This has been actually confirmed. This story has been confirmed by many news outlets, including a very respected reporter at Fox News. But if you're watching Fox News, you will see tremendous effort to discredit that story and actually discredit their own reporting of the story. So this gives you an idea of how different the worldview is depending on which media outlet you listen to or watch.
Well, speaking of media outlets, let's bring in Ryan in DeSoto with thoughts on this. Hi, Ryan.
Good morning. So first, I would just like to say that, you know, I consider myself a swing voter, and so I typically vote on the policies that I agree with. In this case, it ties into my point where it's not just the policies, it's the person this year as well. Following that, you know, I've always kind of said, yeah, all politicians lie in some way, shape, or form. But no politician has ever had a lie tracker made for them. And don't quote me on this, but I'm relatively sure that I found it at the Washington Post, where since 2016, Trump has already told 23,000 approximately lies. That have been fact-checked and either proven false. So that was just my thought on the whole situation.
Ryan, thanks. Charlie, do these trackers matter?
I would like to think they do matter, but I'm not sure, because I think that we're in a state, and this really goes to the question of how we've changed our politics here. You do have a portion of Americans who will believe anything that Donald Trump says, despite the documentation of his lies and how often he lies.
But you also have, I think, a larger group of Americans who may know that the president is not telling the truth, but no longer care. And that troubles me the most, that, you know, politicians who lie are not new. We've never had a politician who lied quite as much as Donald Trump. But also we have this phenomenon of people knowing that it may not be true, but not caring. This is what people like Garry Kasparov, the former world chess champion and Russian dissident, describes as the annihilation of truth. That the point is not to make you to believe the lie. It's making you doubt your critical sensibilities. So you just shrug and you go, I don't know who to believe. I don't know what is truth. And that's a dangerous place for a democracy.
Charlie, very quickly, in a couple seconds, what will you do in November with your ballot?
Well, I've said that I'm going to be voting for Joe Biden because, quite frankly, I just think we have to end this particular segment of American history. So I'm primarily voting against Donald Trump. I think we need to move back to some sort of a normal politics. And once we do that, I'm going to look forward to being not necessarily supportive of everything he
does. We
got
to go here.
Putting an end to this. Yes.
Charlie, thanks on the Ideas Network. Yeah. We're talking with a GOP strategist who's held dozens of focus groups in recent years with women who voted for President Trump in 2016. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Have conservative women voters reached a tipping point? In the past, they've given the president high marks on a solid economy, but low marks on his divisive rhetoric. Amid COVID, now what? Are you a woman who voted for President Trump in 2016? Why did you vote for him? And what do you think of the job he's done so far? Will you vote for him in November? It's 800-642-1234. Sarah Longwell is founder of the group Republican Voters Against Trump. She's publisher of the conservative news site The Bulwark. Sarah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you've been this longtime Republican consultant and strategist, now working to prevent President Trump from being reelected. Hundreds of testimonials on your site. What is it about President Trump and the current GOP that is troubling to you?
Well, you know, I've thought that President Trump was unfit to be president from the moment that he came down the escalator. In fact, I took him not seriously at all in the beginning, which was obviously a mistake. But I think that it really goes to something that conservatives have cared about for a long time, which is character, of which Trump's character is bad. And I think he's tearing the country apart. I believe that he's corrupt. I would like to see somebody else be president in 2020.
So character is job one. You have talked with so many women in focus groups who voted for President Trump of all backgrounds. Tell us about why you're doing this, these focus groups.
Well, you know, because I had been a Republican my entire life, when the party nominated Trump and then, you know, he was elected president, I wanted to understand what was going on with the party. I was concerned about the country. I was concerned about the party. I just wanted to know what people were thinking, what was driving people to vote for somebody who just, to me, you know, seemed just wildly unfit to be the president of the United States. And I think there was a couple things going on that I've heard really consistently. One is Hillary Clinton. You know, when it comes to Republican voters and right-leaning independents, you just cannot overstate the extent to which voters did not want to see Hillary Clinton be president. For decades, they had sort of loathed the Clintons. And it's clear that, you know, in 2016, it was a time where people were not interested in political dynasties. Jeb Bush figured that out pretty quickly. And so in every focus group I do, when I ask women, hey, why did you vote for Donald Trump? Invariably, somebody always says the line, I didn't vote for Donald Trump. I voted against Hillary Clinton. So I think that was one big piece, the kind of negative polarity that dominates our politics, not voting affirmatively for something, but voting against something. The second thing that I hear all the time is the idea that Donald Trump was a businessman, you know, and that people thought that it was time for a businessman to kind of go in and shake things up. And he didn't sound like a normal politician. And so I think when you couple the idea that people didn't want to see Hillary Clinton become president, and they were kind of like, you know, I don't like this guy's rhetoric. I don't like some of the things that he said. I don't like, you know, obviously everybody saw the Access Hollywood tape. So they had reservations, but they were kind of willing to take a chance on him, take a flyer, because One thing that I think people in Washington forget all the time is that so many people watched Donald Trump on The Apprentice. And they saw him as this carefully curated, consummate businessman. And so a lot of voters really had that figure in their head, you know, the person who decisively fired celebrities for 8 years and who was in their living room. And so they felt to some degree like they knew him. And so that gave them the confidence to go ahead, even though they had these reservations, to sort of take a chance on him. But that is different than where we find ourselves now after 3 years of watching him govern.
And you mentioned the Access Hollywood tapes from 2016, which recorded President Trump bragging about sexually assaulting women. Why do you think the tape didn't have more of an effect with women, with this demographic?
You know, I bring this up a lot, not just the tape, but also his history of sexual assault. And I think there's a couple things going on that oftentimes make me, you know, sort of sad about the way that people feel about things. One is that there is a kind of forgiveness for celebrities. And, you know, that while he's not a regular, you know, politician and he's a celebrity and he said some crazy things and I don't like it. I mean, this is what I hear all the time. I don't like it, but, I do think that, you know, I people sort of say that they take sort of the bigger picture into account. And they just, you know, one of the things, this is why Hillary Clinton, it tended to be almost a uniquely bad person for Donald Trump to be running against was because it's so easy for people to immediately point to Bill Clinton and his behavior. It's the reason that when Donald Trump brought Bill Clinton's accusers to one of the debates, it was gross, but also strategically quite brilliant because it reminded people that kind of, it gave them that kind of whataboutism line. Hey, Hillary Clinton, you know, went after the victims of Bill Clinton. And so ultimately people were sort of like, look, there's going to be a sexual predator in the White House one way or the other. And it became, they sort of nullified that criticism in people's minds. And so they were able to say, well, look at the other side. And that sort of gave them what they needed to go ahead and support Trump.
We're talking with Sarah Longwell, who is the founder of the Republican Voters Against Trump, publisher of The Bulwark. We're talking about conservative women voters, where they stand ahead of November, with your insights as well at 800-642-1234. Sarah, I wonder, as you talked with these women, how forthcoming were they? Did you believe the insights that they were telling you about their vote?
I do. And part of the reason that I do is because I've done so many focus groups at this point. I mean, I started doing them in early 2018 and then have done them very consistently over the last 18 months, every couple of weeks. And the answers are so consistent across the groups. And so, I mean, not always, obviously there are outliers and there, you know, people are different. There's some regional differences, but generally speaking, especially on the question you just asked about why they voted for Donald Trump, the answers are incredibly consistent. And so, I do believe when you hear the same things over and over again, you do start to understand, sort of different, kinds of voters. Cause even in the bucket that I talk to, right. So this is, I talk to, typically both college educated and non-college educated women, both, but I think with a slightly higher proportion of college educated women, all of whom voted for Trump in 2016, but now rate him as doing either a somewhat bad or a very bad job. Because for me, you know, I'm thinking about, okay, who are the members of this party? If you think about what the future of the Republican Party is going to look like, I want to understand these voters who both have found themselves being willing to vote for Trump, but sort of reject him and don't think he's doing a good job. So that's who I've been looking to understand. But I do the focus groups, you know, at this point, I didn't always, but since the pandemic hit, I've been doing them virtually over Zoom and I do them myself. And so, you know, I spend a lot of time, you know, really trying to make sure that I'm pulling as much information out of these women as possible. And also the groups aren't that big. And so, you know, with a group of women, you all kind of get to know each other pretty quickly and bond over some of the mutual shared things. A lot of people have kids. A lot of people are coping with the similar things during the pandemic. And so I think people have been really forthright.
What do they say about the tweeting?
They hate the tweeting. You know, that is consistent. And in fact, the criticisms of Donald Trump amongst these groups, you know, I start the groups always sort of the same way. I ask people how they feel like things are going in the country, and they all think things are going very, very badly, which is consistent with the polling that we've seen. And then I ask them, I tell them right up front, hey, look, you're all Trump voters who think he's doing a very bad job. Tell me why you think he's doing a very bad job. And the tweeting is one of the first things that come up. The divisiveness always comes up. The fact that he is actually making things worse in the country. You do hear a lot of people point to racism as a real problem. And just generally, it's the chaos that people really react to. They don't like the chaos. Now, that being said, while they all sort of and some of them recognize other things, too, they'll say things like he's not a real conservative, which, of course, is something that I believe very strongly. This is not a person who's a conservative. But they do all when you push them. So it's funny because when you start the focus groups, they're all really down on Trump. They just they roll their eyes and they think he's just terrible and that, you know, he lies and he's a narcissist. Everyone always says narcissist. He's a bully. But then you think, oh, well, of course, none of these people would vote for Trump again. And that's true in some instances. I would say that, you know, in every group of Trump voters, there's always a few people who are now either definitely voting for Biden or leaning toward voting for Biden, oftentimes about half the group. But there's the other half that is either completely undecided or is still leaning toward Trump. And it's because they believe that as much as they dislike all of those things, they also think that he often doesn't get a fair shot from the media, that, the media is relentlessly negative about him, that he has done some good things, that prior to the pandemic, the economy was doing well and he didn't get enough credit for that. And so there is a kind of defensiveness on his behalf that you see come through, despite the fact, and I'll tell you one other just about the tweeting in particular. It's funny, they hate the tweeting, but almost none of them are on Twitter. I mean, very seldom do you actually get somebody who says, oh yeah, I'm on Twitter, I see it play out. They just see it either on the news or—
It's like residual, if you will.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
I'm wondering, have their views changed since the pandemic, since their situations have changed so much in their life since the pandemic?
Undoubtedly, yes, that is true. And it's been the benefit of doing these sort of consistently over time, which is that, I was able to see them during the impeachment episode where people really did kind of retrench for Trump and were kind of on his side, even though they thought he did something wrong. But as time has gone on, the thing is about the pandemic is the personal consequences that they've suffered as a result of the pandemic. And they do not think he's handled it well. And so you do hear more and more of these women saying the stakes are just too high now and I can't support him going forward.
Well, let's pause there. We have as we talk about the Republican Party and what happens next. You can join in 800-642-1234 as we talk with Sarah Longwell, the founder of the Republican Voters Against Trump, back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Republican strategist Sarah Longwell, who is not supporting President Trump's reelection bid, is backing Joe Biden. She's talked extensively with conservative women voters in recent years and in current times, pandemic times. She launched the group Republican Voters Against Trump, assembling hundreds of testimonials from Republican voters who have seemingly cut ties with the party in this election. Let's take another call now. Mark joining us from Appleton. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What's interesting to me is your guest rightly mentioned about how people didn't trust Hillary Clinton. A lot of people didn't like her. But just how much James Comey helped Trump in building that perception. You know, his comments in July before the election about her, and then a week before the election coming out and saying they found more emails and they were going to have to reinvestigate her. And, you know, they've turned Comey into this kind of terrible person who hated Trump. He really helped him get elected.
Sarah, what do you see there in President Trump's firing of former FBI Director James Comey?
Well, I think that's an extremely good point, actually, that the caller just made that gets lost all the time, which is that, you know, there is this narrative that Donald Trump has constructed that James Comey and the deep state were out to get him, when, of course, if anybody was hurt by sort of the investigations that were going on, the investigation that was ongoing into Trump's campaign was kept secret, while Hillary Clinton's, the investigation into her was made public, and was kind of that, you know, late stage October surprise that undoubtedly had some impact on the election, in large part because it fit a narrative that people had in their minds about her, of being corrupt and being deceptive. And as a result, it just, for people who were on the fence, and I'll tell you, in 2016, I think there were a lot of people on the fence because they didn't really like either candidate. It made a big difference in terms of like seeing in how independents broke, where they broke for Trump, because people just said, you know what, I've had it with the Clintons. I'm going to just take a chance on this other guy over here.
Let's bring in Joe now, joining us from Star Lake. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me on the air. And what I want to say is I think that often people, analysts and people who came out of the academy in many different ways, really fail to appreciate the power of myth. And television is such an amplifier of mythic images and ideas. And I think often we act in ways we don't understand because myth drives it. So let me give you two examples or three examples very briefly with Trump. I was fascinated by when he bought the Miss Universe contest. And, you know, everybody says, oh, so he could go, you know, in the dressing rooms with beautiful women. But really what he was doing was he would constantly could be seen on television around the goddesses of our society, the Aphrodites and the Heras. And in fact, he was like Paris. He was part of the judging of who is the most beautiful goddess. And then he made a deal with the Worldwide Wrestling Federation to have their WrestleMania happen at his casino. So he could be constantly, and if you look at the images, with arms around, Samson and Achilles and all these people. And so now he's around the gods, the male gods, the hero, the warrior gods.
Well, let's let Sarah jump in here on the power of myth, as Joe was saying, and these images of President Trump and who he surrounds himself with.
Yeah, it's an excellent observation. And I think, you know, there was a story that came out very recently where Donald Trump is quoted, I believe it's in Michael Cohen's book, where they knew that if the Stormy Daniels piece got out, Trump said, well, my voters will think it's cool that I slept with a porn star. And, you know, while that makes me, you know, while I am very sort of grossed out by this person's behavior, what Donald Trump, I think, understands and hit with his kind of low cunning, this lizard brain that he has, is that people evaluate celebrities different than they do sort of normal politicians. And so because Donald Trump has been part of the American imagination for so long in these different ways. I mean, he's in a Home Alone movie, you know, he's just been around on Page Six for so long. Everybody kind of knew who he was. And so the normal things that would just absolutely crater a normal politician don't even touch him. And voters who have identified with the Republican Party, which has made character and decency and values and morals central to who it was as a party, to just sort of completely turn their back on that and endorse somebody like Donald Trump, it goes to, because people have this image of him and is in their head that sort of transcends politics in this way that allows him to just get away with anything. And so I think it's a good observation.
What are the observations from the focus groups on their views on the Black Lives Matter movement, the protests, the protesters and what they've been called, agitators, looters, rioters? How are the women responding to this?
Yeah, it's been a really interesting thread through the focus groups because it's changed a little bit. You know, I would say one of the things that's been most interesting to me is that more than the pandemic and the intending economic crisis, I actually found that the racial crisis was moving more women than the other things. Like, they would talk about that as a reason to recoil from Donald Trump even more than the pandemic and the economic crisis. And I think, you know, it was interesting. I've done so many focus groups at this point that I get some repeats now. And so I was talking with this young woman in Pennsylvania, and I had been behind the glass for the first one that I saw her in. Because it was in real life back then. And she said something that had really stuck with me, where she had said she was going to vote for Donald Trump again, even though she thought he was doing a very bad job, because it was better to go with the poison you knew than the poison you didn't know. And so I fast forward to pretty recently, she was in the group again, and I could tell that she had moved significantly away from Trump in the time since I'd last seen her. And I told her, I said, hey, you know, I've actually seen you before. I remember what you said. Could you tell me, it seems like you've moved really far away from Trump. Can you tell me what changed? And she said it was these protests that she had been, you know, sort of with her family. She got stuck with her extended family during lockdown. And, you know, Fox News was on all the time. And it was during the George Floyd killing. And she just heard the way that they talked about it and couldn't stomach it herself. She felt like what happened to him was completely unjust. And it had made her unwilling to vote for Donald Trump again. And I have seen that really across the groups where a lot of women, just white women, talking about how they just need to, you know, think more about the experience of Black people. And so there's been this real openness. Now, I will also say, though, in the more recent weeks, as there has been sort of violence that has gone on that seems now to be more separated from the precipitating event of George Floyd, I do think that there's been a little bit of a change. I did one most recently in Arizona where a lot of the undecideds were pointing to the Kenosha events and saying that that was making them more likely to vote for Donald Trump. But then again, I had one the exact same night with a North Carolina group who had said that the protests had really, you know, opened their eyes about racial justice, and they thought Donald Trump just poured gasoline on the fire. And I honestly think it has a lot to do with age. I think younger conservative women really view the stuff that is happening around racial justice and are really for sort of reevaluating the ways that we think about race. I think older women tend to be a little more worried about the violence and seeing it through the lens of looting and rioting as opposed to racial justice.
There seemed to be a lot more indecision among these women headed into 2016. Are you running into undecideds now as you ask these questions?
I am still running into undecideds a lot, actually. And I would say that part of it is especially, a lot of it has to do with the cohort that I'm specifically talking to. Because I'm talking to people who voted for Trump in 2016, but who don't think he's doing a good job. So these people are tribally Republican, right? They usually vote for Republicans. They voted for Trump once, but they don't like him. And so actually the thing that they are undecided about that I think is really going to change over the next couple months is they want to know, you know, we think, well, Joe Biden's been in public life for the last, 40 years. People have their minds made up about him, but it actually isn't true. He's quite undefined, especially in these people who are more or less Republicans. They don't pay as much attention to Democrats and what they do. And so there's a real sense of, well, I'm waiting to see him in the debates. That was something I just heard so much of in the focus groups is I want to see the debates because they do, when you talk about Biden, you know, Donald Trump is flooding Facebook and other, you know, social media channels with the idea that Joe Biden is senile, that he's, you know, completely lost it. And I think for voters, what's key to them is to making an affirmative vote for Biden is really just knowing more about him and making sure he's also there.
Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sarah Longwell is a Republican strategist, founder of the group Republican Voters Against Trump, publisher of The Bulwark. Earlier, we heard from longtime conservative radio talk show host Charlie Sykes. You can listen back to both conversations in their entirety at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, it's 1A. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.